Welcome to the Configure Price Quote podcast. My name is Frank Sohn and I'm the founder of Lowe CPQ Consulting. This podcast is 100% focused on Configure Price Quote, also known as CPQ, and will provide you useful insights into this topic. My guest today is Mark Bartlett. He is a Chief Experience Officer at FPX. Mark has over 20 years of experience leading customer experience and commerce practices, and he is an avid snowboarder for 30 plus years and has snowboarded in North America, South America, and Europe. Welcome, Mark, to the podcast.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks for having me on the podcast today.
You mentioned a little bit earlier that you go on regular backcountry expeditions in Canada and how you got into an accident 2 months before your wedding. Tell us a little bit more about that.
That was a tough one to have to call my wife once I my now wife. She wasn't my wife then, right? Once I was able to hike out of the backcountry, make it to a hospital, and have a phone contact to let her know that there had been an accident. Number one, I was alive. But number two, I did some pretty serious damage to my face. So that was, I think that conversation, hurt a little bit more than the accident itself. But I've had a lot of close calls in the backcountry. You have to be respectful of that mountain environment, respect nature, the forces, the weather, the conditions. But I've been fortunate enough to be able to snowboard pristine mountain environments, mostly in the Canadian interior of British Columbia. There's a lot of really great ranges that get incredible snow and have magnificent access. I was lucky enough to go to school, go to university at McGill in Montreal and connect with all of these great Canadians. So there's a bit of a magnet there that draws me back to the Canadian wilderness and having folks who know that area, going with experienced guides, really creates a indelible experience. And hiking in and going in on sleds and snowmobiles has always been the way to get that access, as opposed to flying in on a chopper or, taking a cat up the trail or something like that. Going up and skinning up and climbing up on your own power, there's something meditative about that experience, and it just really helps to clear your head, especially given that this industry is so fast-paced and hectic and working in technology and software and customer experience. You're solving lots of complex business problems every day, but it's nice to be able to put that in perspective and go out into nature and have a different view on what's running through your head. So it's just a passion of mine and something that brings you closer together with your friends and also gives you a good sense of perspective, like I said, helps you see the bigger picture.
And I can fully relate to this because I also go skiing, and I go skiing in the Colorado Rockies. Obviously, there are lots of very great ski resorts out there, and I can fully subscribe to that you can very much relax and think about something else. But we're not here to talk about skiing and snowboarding, even though that's a lot of fun. The first thing that I wanted to ask you, Mark, was also the Chief Experience Officer. That is something you don't run into every day, right? So what does it mean? Tell us a little bit more. Also, when I introduced you and said customer experience, commerce practices, tell us a little bit the background to this title.
I'll tell you a little bit of background about myself, Frank, for a minute, and then talk about how this title is evolving and gaining traction in our industry. But it comes from taking a user-centered approach to solving some of these technical and business problems. From the earliest days, some of the pioneers and practitioners of user-centered design, I was fortunate enough to cut my teeth in the early days under Clement Mok, who came out of Apple and brought these user-centered design principles to the world of commerce and interactive design in the mid-90s. And that moment was right when commerce and e-commerce were starting to form, and the digitization of all of these incredible experiences. So being able to start to solve those problems by looking at the eyes of the, through the eyes of the end users, thinking about that quote unquote customer perspective and letting that be the true north for solutioning a technology system or an e-commerce platform. That was really influential to me as my career was starting out in the beginning of e-commerce. And we kind of flash forward 20 plus years now, which is pretty incredible that this business has matured over that amount of time. Some of those user-centered design principles are now the best practices of design thinking and that organizations are bringing to help solve these digital transformation problems that we still encounter today. So when I came to FPX a little over a year ago, I was able to bring that user-centered design approach to start to think about the customer experience that we engender and that we deliver with our software products. So as the chief experience officer, what I'm really responsible for is not only the experience that our customers have with our products, but ultimately the experience that the end users, our customers. And again, customer is a tricky word here, right? Because not every end user is a quote unquote customer. But the experience that those end users have when interacting with the solutions that we put out into market and help deploy for our customers. And having a software company in general and a CPQ software company in particular, having an organization like that choose to fill that chair and create the position of a chief experience officer was something bold and innovative that FPX was able to do. And it was very exciting to start to help FPX begin to think of solving these complex business and technology problems through the eyes of the end user and not just take a traditional software approach of looking at technology feature by feature, function by function, and you know, screwing in a bolt to fasten a particular system together and call the job done. The traditional kind of technology out approach, I would call. We really want to bring more of a customer in approach to solving these complex problems, because it's not just screwing in nuts and bolts anymore, right, Frank? It's about delivering outcomes and participating in this next wave of digital transformation.
Absolutely agree. What I wonder is, how does it look like from a customer point of view or an end user point of view? Because I hear people talk about make configuration as easy as going on Amazon. Or you want to get rid of sales enablement training because you think it could be done faster. What I understand what the goal is. I'm interested to see how you contribute with your design thinking to solve it.
And that's, I think that is the goal. You stated it, is to really create a seamless, easy to use journey for those end users across whichever channel and whichever touch point they happen to interact with our customers' businesses, right? It may be collaborative, consultative, co-creation moment by working very closely with direct sales, but oftentimes it begins in this journey of self-service, especially in the evolution of e-commerce and other self-service channels in B2B. We need to be able to deliver that Amazon-like experience and maintain the consistency across all of those touch points. Because in B2B, that customer journey is so complex. It's not just one. Today's end user is going to interact with an enterprise or organization across many channels, from self-service, self-discovery, maybe through the indirect, you know, the distributor, the channel side, and then ultimately be brought back in and engage with the enterprise's direct teams. So what we're striving to do with our technology solutions is really help facilitate that experience across all of those different channels and make it not only consistent for the end user of that technology, but also consistent for the internal user, for that direct salesperson, for that partner or channel salesperson, to make sure that they're seeing a consistent view and a consistent set of information so that everybody is speaking the same language and can have a much more proactive dialogue and collaborative experience. And I think that's, if we can get there, right, then in essence, we have succeeded in creating something that as easy to use as shopping on Amazon, or we like to say as easy to use as choosing a show to watch on Netflix, right? Something we're all really familiar with these days.
And one question I also have for you, Mark, is who is helping you in your team, or who do you listen to in addition to your customers? Are you, for this design, you're having some collaboration with others, with universities, or how do you get these ideas and how do they flow into the products at FPX?
I think the customers, we listen, the customer has a firm seat on our product advisory board. Ultimately, our customers, and like I said, our customers' customers, working with the end users of the technology to ensure that they have a voice at the table. But as you suggested, this is an emerging field in our industry, and the best practices are kind of being codified now as we pioneer this activity to a certain extent. So we do have to look to research, industry publications, and thought leaders out there who have charted this ground in other adjacent industries, and we can sort of model their behavior and their success. And one of the ones that I've really looked at personally, and that we at FPX have looked at closely, is the realm of B2B e-commerce. Because of the adjacency of the type of journeys that end users and customers are going on in their commerce experiences, there's a lot to learn from the evolution of that field that we can apply to the CPQ space in particular. And some of the leaders of commerce have been extremely influential in how they've adopted some of these user-centered or customer-in approaches to solving these commerce problems. We can adopt those and bring those to solve the more complex CPQ problems that are adjacent.
And I would expect that you will have a wide field in front of you, because with all the different developments in CPQ, there's probably a lot of opportunity to come up with additional design ideas. There will be a need for it, I would expect, right? So like with artificial intelligence, natural language processing and stuff like that. Is that what you see as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think what those technologies help to do, and those are very much part of our predictive analytics suite, is very strong inside of our platform today, but we can continually enhance those offerings with the power of cognitive computing, with machine learning. And in doing so, we're enhancing those best practices through that automation and through the continual shortening of time. The moment of time from the observation of a behavior to the analysis of that behavior to the recommendation the action and the measurement, you know, kind of using a user research or user-centered design, you know, typical approach or methodology there, the time between those stages is drastically shortened and reduced by the power of cognitive computing and machine learning. And the ways in which end users can provide feedback and interact through these customer journeys are enhanced by conversational interfaces and some of the other technologies that you described. So all of these things are key to our success and key to the evolution of the engagement that we're trying to create between these users and the technologies that, you know, in our business, right? The old adage in B2B used to be, if we build it, you must use it. It's part of your job function. It's something that you have to do to get your job done. And while that adage is still somewhat true, our end users, especially these millennials who are coming on board, the digital natives who are coming into the B2B organizations, they have much higher expectations of their digital experiences. So we have to be able to meet and exceed those expectations and quicken the input and the outcome, right? We have to shorten the time between that observation and the adjustment and the action. And these technologies, as we bring them into our platform, really help us to do that. So those, you know, those technologies are definitely future looking and ways that we can better create this engagement. But we also, I think, have to look towards these different channels and different modes and start to place CPQ in this larger context of digital interaction and the way in which users interact with enterprises and do their job. It's no longer a siloed function of direct sales enablement and kind of SFA or tightly coupled only to CRM. It's extending CPQ technology out into commerce and self-service because CPQ is so perfectly positioned to solve these complex buying and selling problems that B2B presents. You know, we kind of jokingly say, hey, let's just create the Amazon experience, but adding a widget to your cart, paying with your stored payment instrument, your credit card, and getting a box on your doorstep the next day, that's a really simple customer journey at the end of the day. And it's really only a part of the rich complexity that the B2B journey brings to the table. So we're aiming for that ease and simplicity, but the playing field or the space in which we're doing this stuff, it is far more intricate and complicated.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I mean, the desired experience is quickly understood, as you said, right? So what I wonder also is, what can a customer do to prepare for a project like this from your point of view?
For us and how we're advising our customers is to not really think of this as a siloed technology project, but to really start to think of CPQ initiatives as part of these larger digital transformation mandates that are often coming down from the board level and from the C-suite in the enterprise. Obviously, a lot of the impetus and a lot of the pain points are felt further down in the organization. And your sales leaders and your technology leaders are going to be agitating for a solution to a problem. But what we're often advising our customers to do is put that solution to that specific problem into your larger digital transformation context, because while it has to be a technology conversation, because we are implementing a platform and a solution at the end of the day, it equally has to be a business conversation and a strategic conversation and make sure that the goals of your digital transformation agenda or mandate are making room for this type of experience transformation around your buying and selling customer journey. And that's some consulting, right? That's not just a CPQ software sale. So that does require consultative collaboration with our prospects and our customers. And it also requires that we start to rely on our expanding ecosystem of partners, experienced consultants and digital transformation experts like Accenture, Deloitte, and Sapient Razorfish, who are having those big picture digital transformation conversations. We need to have them understand how CPQ in particular fits into that larger consultancy or strategic endeavor.
From a complete end-to-end point of view, what I see more and more lately is it starts on the CRM side, ends on the ERP side. CPQ is right in the middle. And I think also, based on what we discussed earlier with the design, there's probably also quite some room to make this journey a little bit easier. And since you have a partnership with SAP also, the question here, is there anything interesting that may be happening product-wise here in the near future?
I think, you know, you've got a kind of good two-part question there, Frank. You know, the first one is really around this notion of where does this journey start? And I think the point of view that we're putting out there, based on what we're seeing in the conversations that we're having with our customers, is the journey actually starts on some of those earliest touches between end users and enterprises, or between customers and brands, if you want to take it back, you know, to the big picture. And we firmly believe, we think that CPQ can play a role way out up or way up in the front office. And we can start to move where traditionally CPQ was positioned very close to the back office and integrated to the ERP. And then the era of CRM and sales automation and sales enablement technology came, right? In the last 15 years, the CPQ conversation has really been tightly coupled to CRM. And now we feel we're on the brink of that next evolution, and CPQ can move further out to the front to some of the positions where product catalog or brochure, or for the mature organizations where commerce is playing a role for them now. CPQ can cohabitate in that front office experience and really be one of the primary first touches that enterprises have with their end users. And that's really exciting. That's really fun for us to come out of the back and move our way further towards the front. And you talked about SAP there a little bit. One of the thinkers that I personally admire and that at FPX we really follow is Karsten Thoma of Hybris and SAP. And I think Karsten has always said that, you know, the past 30 years were the radical evolution, or not radical, right? Because 30 years, that's a long time. So the evolution and transformation of the back office with your ERP and the rise of SAP, the next 30 years ahead of us are going to be that evolution with moments of revolution for the enterprise front office. And that's a really exciting moment to be in as we move further out front. And in terms of our SAP partnership, what we're doing is continuing to attach ourselves to enhance and extend those front office capabilities. So our first core integrations at SAP were to SAP Hybris. We have our integrations to ECC and our leveraging of variant configuration. But we saw a moment of opportunity in what was Hybris's customer engagement and commerce group around the Hybris commerce stack and also their cloud for customers stack to move the experience of CPQ further out into the front office. And that's been something that we've pursued and is something that we're continuing to invest in our roadmap, are more and more integrations to the front office experiences, not only on the commerce stacks, right? That's a logical connection, but also out on some of the content management stacks or experience management stacks, such as Adobe and Sitecore as well.
Now, FBX has been around for quite a while. And are there any common myths that you're still running into today about FBX?
Well, I think some of that history, Frank, is a bit of a blessing and a curse. And I think some of those of us who are newer to the organization, part of our responsibility is to communicate how FPX is changing. One could see a 30-year history as something that is a little more hard to move, is a little more difficult to change, is a bit older and a bit more traditional. And we have to be very proud of that tradition. FPX got its start over 30 years ago in the 80s of finding ways to help farmers in America's heartland create complex configurations of International Harvester and John Deere tractors down on the Iowa-Minnesota border. And there's a lot of experience and a lot of learning that comes from solving those problems for, you know, a pretty key and essential set of end users and customers. But one could look on that history and see a little bit of that traditionalism at play. So what we're trying to communicate and really articulate is from the earliest days, our technology and our solution has always been developed as platform agnostic. And from the earliest days of web services, first with SOAP APIs back in the day, right, 20 years ago, and then over the course of the last 10 to 15 years, leveraging RESTful APIs and web services, it's really a modern construct and a modern architecture that can leverage this history as expertise and depth of experience. And I think that's really what we have to communicate, is that history is not a burden, it's an asset. And it's something that allows us to be one of those early pioneers in CPQ who's been there and done that and seen a myriad set of business problems and solutions, and have taken that experience into our modular platform so that we're also then relevant to the emerging technologies of tomorrow, and bringing that experience forward and not just resting on our laurels and staying in the past.
One thing I ask every vendor, and I want to ask you that as well, is what do you think makes your product different or better than that of the competitors?
Well, I think in that last section there, Frank, one of the things that gives us an advantage is that open, modular, web service-based architecture. So that the power of our engine and all of that depth of experience and knowledge that we brought into the evolution of that engine, that core engine can be deployed into whichever ecosystem, environment, touch point, or experience that we want to create for our end users. We are we have our productized integrations into the leading CRM platforms. We were the first to have an application on Salesforce in their AppExchange, almost 14 years ago. But we're not dependent upon those other stacks and those other solutions to deliver our solution. Like I said, if we want to take our modular architecture out into the front office and connect to an experience management technology to provide early product configuration and pricing reference and guidance in that self-service early discovery part of the customer journey, our technology enables us to do that. We don't have to be deployed into a Salesforce environment or other CRM environment in order to run our solution. We can deliver that same experience at other touch points and at other points in a technology ecosystem. And that platform agnosticity is something that we're very, very proud about that helps our customers be flexible. And you know, the reality, Frank, and you know this as well, the large B2B enterprises who are our customers oftentimes have multiple CRMs in different business units or operating entities. They have multiple ERPs, multiple pricing master, product information, product catalog instances. So we have to be able to integrate into that diverse technology ecosystem and not be totally dependent on any one platform to roll out and deploy our solution.
Excellent. And I think that was a very interesting discussion, Mark, and gives a different perspective also from a design point of view. Enjoyed it very much. If people have questions to you or want to see a demo from the FPX team, what's the best way to do that? First, maybe with the contact information for you.
Oh, great. Well, we'll, you know, at any point, encourage to continue this dialogue. Our prime face and our prime voice is fpx.com. We've got clear contact and ways to get in touch. You'll see demos. You'll see industry-specific solutions and demonstrations out there. And we're also always willing and able to continue that conversation to provide that deeper dive into our technology and create those conversations and interactions. Myself personally, I'll share my information, Frank, with anybody who wants to follow up and continue the conversation. It's very simple. Mark, M-A-R-K, dot Bartlett, B-A-R-T-L-E-T-T, at fpx.com. Bartlett, like the pear, for those North American listeners out there. Easy to remember. And we're always publishing our thoughts and ideas out on our social platforms, on Twitter, our own blog series, and so on and so forth. So we'd love for you to connect with us and continue to follow us and start that conversation.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you for having me, Frank. I really appreciate the chance to have a conversation with you.
I'd like to thank everyone for listening and hope you learned something interesting today. If you like the podcast, please go ahead and rate it on iTunes or share it with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, you can find us online at www.novocpq.com. So long, everyone.